Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm sitting here with Time Magazine this week, The Angelina Effect, cover of the beautiful Angelina Jolie. I think in the last 30 years, this is one of, as it relates to medical history, one of the more interesting and important moments, and I want to make commentary on it today for you to give you the other side, because I think only half the picture was given to you on Time Magazine this week. We call it the Angelina Effect, and it means at some point medical doctors are going to begin to tell you that you're genetically predisposed to a certain disease, including cancer, and that you're going to have to think a little bit more seriously about cutting out that body part. Now, I'm going to be very careful today not to be critical, because personally, I certainly do not disagree. So I'm going to make a counterintuitive statement. I don't disagree with Angelina Jolie's decision, and that is not my right, really, anyway, to disagree. But what I find concerning, and what I'm going to argue today, or point out today, I should say, because there's no real need for argument, but to point out is that there's another perspective that you're not getting from Time Magazine. And the press so quick to capitalize on this. If you get to my website, you'll see the front picture, the cover page of Time Magazine. You'll also see the centerfold showing Angelina Jolie in a very, I would say, presidential pose. The point being that she made a very brave decision, and that is not argued here, but she made a very brave decision that required a great deal of integrity, and that people should start thinking more seriously about making choices like hers. That is the undeniable implication of having her on the front page of Time Magazine, just as the centerfolds, I think, will tell us. But there's another perception here. We're going to get to that. Doctors told her that she had the BRCA mutation, and that was giving her a 95% chance. If you didn't follow this, you should. This is truly going to have great implications. The doctors told her she had the BRCA mutation. So that's a gene that has a nucleotide sequence that's not like everybody else's. It's what we call a mutation. And if you can get to the website, straighttalk.cc, just as I did a few weeks ago, we have pictures of the double helical structure of the DNA molecule, and we point out what we mean by a DNA sequence. The primary arrangement of nucleotides, adenine, cytosine, guanine, that primary arrangement of nucleotides is what we call the primary sequence. If in a mutation that sequence is different, and that difference in the sequence may mean that you're going to be told, specific to the meaning of that misappropriation of nucleotide, you're going to be told perhaps that you have a very high possibility of getting a particular type of disease, in this case, breast cancer. Now, to top that, to back that up, of course, Angelina's mom also, she had cancer, Angelina didn't, but her mom had it, and her mom died of it. The point is that when you're told that your sequence is deleterious or mutant and that you have a 95% chance of getting it, in addition to what she was told that she had a 50% chance with this mutation of getting ovarian cancer. And when you have a mother that you love that died of cancer and you're being told you have a 95% chance of getting it again, what would you do? So I want to be real clear as we unfold this hour's show today that there's no criticism here. In fact, my mother died of breast cancer metastasized to bone. I wish she had had that kind of counsel. And knowing my mother, I would have probably advised her to do the mastectomy herself, because I could tell you my mother would never have taken any other steps outside the conventional medical model. And even then, when you're being told that you have a 95% chance of getting something, how much holistic medicine is really going to influence that? So let's be clear about one thing, all right? This is not a statement about a brave woman's choice, but there are implications here. And those implications run deep, and this nation will never be the same. They were right to put her on the cover of Time magazine, because she is setting a trend. She is part of a consortium of people who view genetic testing as having real physical implications into everyday life. So we're going to take off from this point. There is another side to this, and you weren't given that side in Time magazine. You're not given that side often enough. And that other side is just as much a part of science as pointing out to somebody that they have the BRCA mutation. This isn't the first time this has happened. In the 1980s, the early 80s, I had the horror and I guess the pleasure, in a sense, of watching another illness, another disease, strike our nation. It was called AIDS. And it was the early 1980s, and I watched this unfold. I saw the medical, the social, and the political machine start to turn America to panic. Many of you are old enough to remember very clearly the early 80s. Reagan was in office. He was our president. And on the cover of Time magazine, if it wasn't Ronald Reagan, it was about HIV, AIDS, the epidemic, and what was going to happen. I saved, in fact, all of those articles, even back then. I've had them for 30 years, turning yellow and gold and collecting dust. I've saved them because this was medical history. It was the first time for me to actually see medical history unfold. We all took those warnings very, very, very seriously. I remember fist fights in gyms, because when you worked out in a gym or a health spa, some of your sweat would be left on one of the exercise machines. And we were very justifiably so uptight about the possibility that you could get HIV and therefore AIDS from somebody else's sweat. It wasn't long before the cover of Time magazine, and I have that article. It wasn't long before the cover of Time magazine basically stated that scientists Gallo, Hazeltine, Matilda Krim had isolated the HIV virus from none other than teardrops from your darling loved ones. And we found that evil, demonic HIV virus lurking in something as innocent as teardrops. I mean, we had this nation in a state of panic. Think back. The topper for me, already fairly well schooled in science from college, the topper for me was a guy named Dr. William Hazeltine. He returned from Munich, Germany, with really bad news. I have that article also. Dr. William Hazeltine returned from Munich, Germany, stating that our troops, our GIs, are testing positive for HIV by the dozens at the venereal clinics in Munich, Germany, and that they're picking up this evil virus from prostitutes coming up from Africa trying to make a living in Munich, Germany. And that these GIs, our troops, our boys, will be returning home to the wheat fields of Kansas to spread this horrid disease to sweet, young, innocent virgins and farm girls of Kansas and various other states. That's straight out of the newspapers. There was this whole sequence that occurred that all pointed to the epidemic, the panic, the plague, and that we had to do something about it. And that if we didn't give medical research billions upon billions of dollars, AIDS states like it did in Uganda and the rest of the AIDS belt. Even still, The United States Congress did not listen. Even still, our president, Ronald Reagan, the ultra-conservative, did not budge. AIDS at that time was a gay disease, and so be it to the gays. Congress wasn't even looking at it. And then that fateful day occurred. Remember this day when Rock Hudson got AIDS, when the nation gasped at one of our movie stars, the people we follow, the people we emulate, the people that Americans are known to be in association with, especially in Los Angeles, especially in Southern California. Rock Hudson gets AIDS, and the nation's aghast. We didn't even know Rock Hudson was gay. How could this happen to one of our American heroes, our American film idol? Shortly thereafter, and I followed this chronologically, one step led to the next, led to the next, led to the next. And that fateful moment, we attach a star to the disease. If you can attach a star to a disease, you're going to do what requires the support and the sponsorship of the National Institute of Health, and that's how you get your grant money. Congress wouldn't appropriate a dime for AIDS until Rock Hudson got AIDS. And the Hollywood community, patroned by Elizabeth Taylor, who helped put Ronald Reagan in office back in the 1960s as governor of California, persuaded Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan persuaded Congress, etc., to appropriate the first great appropriation. Check the history books. $220 million for AIDS research. That number rolled into billions over the next decade. Absolute billions. Now, nothing's wrong with that. Don't misunderstand. Scientists, medical researchers need money. They need sponsorship. They need patrons. They need platforms. They need fundraisers. Nothing gets done. There is no research for anything unless somebody pays. Except there was one big problem. The supposition, the premise, the statement, the counsel we were given in the early 80s regarding AIDS is that it was going to spread like wildfire to the wheat fields of Kansas, and it was going to become an epidemic. That many of us by now would have perished. Many heterosexual men, many heterosexual women would have perished to this epidemic like it occurred in Uganda, like it occurred in Africa. This was the song everyone was singing back then. This cannot be denied. This is in the literature. This was on the news. This was recorded. This was observed. This was repeated relentlessly. Go over there across the Atlantic and look at Africa. Look at Uganda. Look at Zaire. Look at these countries in the AIDS belt and know that America is close behind. This is what we were told, and it was on that premise that all this grant money was railroaded in on the back of Rock Hudson and Africa. And it would have been okay, except one thing never occurred. AIDS never became an epidemic. Yes, it's tragic for one person to have died from it. Yes, whether you're straight or gay, it doesn't matter. It's a horrible disease. But you have to understand something here, because it's going to have very important implications for tomorrow. AIDS never spread. It didn't become close to an epidemic. It wasn't smallpox. It wasn't the bubonic plague. It wasn't the Spanish flu. It wasn't close to any of those. And the point is, and I have the articles, at the time, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of medical doctors, virologists, epidemiologists, public health officials, microbiologists, scientists, journalists, lay people, and they were all shouting at that time, the early 80s, that we did not even understand transmission. That Gallo and Montaigne out of France at the Pasteur Institute didn't even understand the dynamics of transmission, and that the HIV virus was very difficult to transmit, and that unless anal sex was practiced, dirty blood transfusions, or needle injections, these doctors were also saying it would never spread, not even close. That this proposed, imagined epidemic, this prophesied epidemic, was built on very weak arguments in science. Michael Duisberg, go get the book, Reinventing the AIDS Virus. Michael Duisberg, D-U-E-S-B-E-R-G, German, a molecular biologist from Berkeley, one of the great retrovirus doctors, at least in the last 50 years. He was a retrovirus specialist. He had every credential to study HIV, which is a single-stranded animal. Read that book, Reinventing the AIDS Virus. The premise of the book is, we never proved that HIV caused AIDS. The whole premise upon which we suffered that 4, 5, 6 years of very intense public opinion, all slanted in the direction of the oncoming epidemic, of this association between you get HIV, you're going to get AIDS, and AIDS will sweep through the United States just like it did in Africa. And it never happened. That's the political machine. That's the social machine. That's the medical machine. It happened this week. Truly, this needed to be on the cover of Time magazine, because it represented a dramatic moment in the way people view health and the choices they're going to make. The problem is it left out another magazine. This magazine was published in the year 2006. It's an article in Discover magazine, and it's called DNA is Not Destiny. Go on the website, straighttalk.cc, get the link to the article in Discover magazine in November of 2006, DNA is not destiny. No, it's not. And yet, we all know that moment, and we're looking at that statement now with through testing. See, before, the statement was always made in retrospect. You got the disease, and why did you get it? And doctors would say, well, it's genetic. You didn't want the disease, and you do all these crazy cleanses and all these lifestyle changes. And doctors would laugh and say, look, it's genetic. This word has been thrown around ignorantly for way too long. Ignorantly on both sides. If you are a social conservative in the sense of science and medicine listening to this show, understand that this talent is saying on both sides of the fence, whether it's holistic or strict allopathic, the word genetic has been misused. The word epigenetic, and we'll get to that later, is misused also on both sides of the fence. And this is the point. The point is that we've got evolving here two very large issues in science. And they are large issues in science. But now they're going to transfer to large issues in society, in choice, in how you deal with something as traumatic as cancer, as life-threatening, aggressive cancer, as diseases that cost money, cause pain, suffering, tears, crippling illnesses, that we can perhaps tell someone long before they get them that they have a genetic tendency, a strong genetic tendency, a 95% genetic tendency. And that's powerful. And that should be celebrated. Nobody should misunderstand that this holistic talent is saying anything outside that this should be celebrated. And on this day, I support, if my opinion is warranted, and it barely is, because Angelina's choice is for Angelina. But she's on the cover of Time magazine. I have a health show, and her choice is being asked to be looked at, to be scrutinized, to be respected, exalted, and to be copied. So in a sense, it is appropriate, I comment, but make no mistake about it. Her choice was sound for her. That's not the point. And that takes us to the article. Get the article. Get online, straighttalk.cc, print the article. It's there for you to read. November 2006, Discover Magazine, DNA is not destiny. Let me just give you the first paragraph. The first paragraph of this article. Back in the year 2000, Randy Jurdle, a professor of radiation oncology at Duke University, and his postdoctoral student, Robert Waterland, designed a groundbreaking genetic experiment that was simplicity itself. They started with a pair of fat yellow mice, known to scientists as agouti mice, A-G-O-U-T-I. Agouti mice, so-called because they carry a gene, the agouti gene, that in addition to making the rodents ravenous, it makes them prone to diabetes and cancer. So again, same situation. We have these mice, and they have an almost 100% chance, because of a deleterious gene, the agouti gene. In Angelina's case, it was called the BRCA gene. There's BRCA1 and 2, and et cetera, and these are deleterious genes. These are genes that the mice, and these are genes that people wish they didn't have. So here we have Randy Jurdle, professor of radiation oncology. That's a name you don't hear. You'll never hear it. They're doing this experiment with agouti mice. And these mice have a gene. And that gene, the agouti gene, will guarantee them cancer and diabetes. Jurdle and Waterland set about to see if they could change the unfortunate genetic legacy of these little creatures. Typically, when the agouti mice breed, most of the offspring are identical to their parents, just as yellow, just as fat, and susceptible to life-shortening disease. The parent mice in Waterland's experiment produced a majority of offspring that looked altogether different. Something went amok. These young mice were slender and brown. Moreover, they did not display their parents' susceptibility to cancer and diabetes and lived to a spry old age. The effects of the agouti gene, substitute the BRCA gene, had been virtually erased. Remarkably, the researchers effected this transformation without altering a single letter of the mouse's DNA. Their approach instead was radically straightforward. They changed the mom's diet. Starting just before conception, Waterland fed a test group of mother mice a diet rich in methyl donors. Methyl donors are small chemical clusters that can attach to a gene and turn it off. These molecules are common in the environment and found in many foods, including onions, garlics, beets, and in the food supplements often given to pregnant women. After being consumed by the mothers, the methyl donors work their way into the developing embryo's chromosomes and onto the critical agouti gene. The mothers passed along the agouti gene to their children intact. But thanks to their methyl-rich pregnancy diet, they had added a gene. They had added to the gene a chemical switch that turned off the gene's deleterious effects. Get to my website. Download this article, blow it up, and give it to your friends. Attach it to every magazine we sold this week with Angelina on the front cover, and insert this in there, because it is a very similar situation, and yet look at what they left out of the Time Magazine article. Now, don't get annoyed, although this might warrant that. Just ask yourself, are we doing what we did 30 years ago with the AIDS virus? Are we basically painting a picture that there's nothing that you can do but scramble to your hospital and take the test or the drug or the surgery? At least we should get the other side of this picture. Okay, you got your thinking caps on. Let's look at this again. In this article, back in 2000, an oncologist and his postgrad student are dealing with an agouti mice. This mice has a gene, just like the BRCA gene. This gene guarantees these mice cancer and diabetes. These mice don't get cancer and diabetes. These mice are bred in captivity, generation after generation after generation. These mice are continually getting diabetes. They're super fat. They're yellow. They don't look like normal mice, and cancer. And their lives are being inextricably shortened. And these doctors, in their own words, want to see if they can change the unfortunate genetic legacy of these little creatures. They don't make one change, not one single change in the mouse's environment, except one thing. They feed it differently. They feed it a diet rich in methyl donors. And the mice don't get cancer anymore, and the mice don't get diabetes. You've got to put that next to the Angelina effect. The Angelina effect is saying, if you're a woman and you're 25 years old and you have the BRCA mutation and you go to a doctor and you're genetically tested, think about having your breasts cut off. Because just like Angelina, you might have an extremely high probability of some form of disease that you can prevent. Again, guess what? Not every disease is going to respond to a change in diet. Not every deleterious mutation is going to be changed or have that gene suppressed simply on the basis of methylation. That's the other side of it. You can't abuse the Gouty mice experiment. You can't take its implications to the point where you start spouting nonsense. My point, my salient point, my point above all other points is, why isn't this on the cover of Time magazine? Why isn't this included at the second half of this article? Why isn't Dr. Waterland and Dr. Jertl, why aren't their names known? Why is it just get tested genetically, worry frantically about the 95% probability or the higher than normal probability, and then consider drugs and surgery? And don't think this is not what is going to happen, not just for breast cancer, but for every disease, autoimmune disease, the hundreds of diseases, IBS, you name it. The implications of what happened, the implications of the cover of Time magazine are enormous. You are experiencing medical history. I kid you not. And you're being asked to drink the Kool-Aid. Take that one in. This is a big day. Genes express. Genes are given higher probabilities of expression if, in fact, the primary sequence. So if you can get to the website, just simply look at the DNA molecule, this double helix with all these little different colored pegs, which represent nucleotides, adenine, guanine, thymine, cytosine. These nucleotides have sequences. And the sequence of nucleotides in the double helix is called the primary sequence. But these double helixes, these DNA strands, are wrapped in different configurations. And these different configurations are also part of whether or not the gene with the inappropriate sequence, the mutant gene with the undesirable nucleotide sequence, these shapes or conformations of the DNA strand as it wraps itself around the histone, H-I-S-T-O-N-E. The histone is the spool, like a spool of thread. The thread is the DNA strand. The spool, the solid part, the part made of the hard cylindrical cardboard, that's called the histone. And the histone is also part of what determines whether or not that deleterious nucleotide sequence will express. Now, that histone is a secondary determinant. And you got to catch this. This is important. The histone is a secondary determinant, and that secondary determinant may be familial. In a sense, that may be genetic. It may be passed on. Your mother had that secondary determinant, and you've got it, and your child's going to have it. When the histone, or when the secondary determinants, whether or not a tumor will, whether or not a gene will turn off to methylation, or turn on to methylation, or acetylation, or all these little things that will determine secondary to the primary sequence, all these chemical modifications that will determine whether that gene, deleterious gene in this case, expresses or doesn't, may be, in fact, hereditary. And when they are, changing your diet isn't going to do beans. It's not going to do anything. It's one of those unfortunate characteristics that we find as mother and father produce offspring, that we give our children tendencies or slants. Somehow it got built in to the basic chemistry of the body. Now, we call those secondary determinants epigenetic. And sometimes, and this is the point, as with the agouti mice. So now we're going to slant the argument again. Sometimes, as with the agouti mice, those secondary determinants are environmental. Sometimes you can turn off a gene by methylating it through the diet. It just works that way, meaning the secondary determinant, not the primary sequence, but the secondary determinant can be environmental. Now, if you don't catch the distinction between a secondary determinant being familial, meaning it's very tough to change it, and a secondary determinant being environmental, meaning it's very easy to change it, and that diseases can certainly vary in whether they're going to respond to environmental changes or not. If you don't catch that distinction, you can abuse this argument. You can tell somebody whose secondary determinants, whose epigenes, in addition to a deleterious primary sequence, so they have the BRCA mutation, and their secondary determinants that will express the gene are passed down the line also, so their epigenetics is working against them also. And you can take that epigenetic passion and you can say, well, I heard that epigenetics is the whole science of understanding that we're not slaves to our DNA, and that if you think positive thoughts, you're not going to get breast cancer. And that if you do, it's because you didn't think positively enough, or you didn't do your gallbladder cleanses. And you can be dead wrong. And that's an abuse of science. And that's what holistic practitioners are often criticized for doing. We're not going to do that here. You're not going to do that as intelligent, objective listeners. You're going to take the next grade up. You're going to understand that holistic medicine just begs science to think with a more open mind. That in between holistic medicine and science is the hybrid of the two. And that hybrid, functionally speaking, simply means, why aren't we spending more research money, more time, and giving more press to those types of diseases and cancers in those types of people or animals that can be as variable and influenced by something as trite as a change in diet, just like with the gouty mice? And yes, mice are not people and people are not mice, but guess what? They're similar enough. And the clear implication and my salient point is that in Time Magazine should be another section. Next week's Time Magazine should be something akin to DNA is not destiny, and that we're going to spend billions and billions and billions and billions on epigenetic studies, on determining whether your ankylosing spondylitis or your rheumatoid arthritis or your ovarian cancer or your breast cancer or your brain cancer or whatever disease you may have, from diabetes to toenail fungus, can be epigenetically influenced in terms of things that you can control in your environment. On top of that, consider this. Consider that 200 or 300 years ago, with all these so-called genetic tendencies and deleterious mutations, far, 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 far fewer people were getting cancer. Oh no, I'm wrong. Excuse me, I apologize on air. Doctors years ago, 200, 300 years ago, when people came in with broccoli spears growing out their head, they didn't know that was cancer. They didn't know that was brain cancer. When they cut those heads open, when they went to their church and asked permission to cut those heads open, they didn't realize those were tumors. We just didn't know a person died of cancer back then. That's nonsense. That is absolute bunk if you believe that. Doctors have understood cancer for hundreds and hundreds. They've understood growths, malformations, growths that come out of organ systems that shouldn't be coming out of organ systems. Doctors, medical researchers, anybody, the local priest has always understood what a tumor was. We just didn't see them nearly as much 300 years ago. Where were those deleterious mutations? If, in fact, the BRCA mutation, does anybody know when it was introduced into the gene pool? That's an interesting one. I haven't been able to find that. Get on the website and comment. If you're a medical researcher, a medical doctor, a geneticist, a molecular biologist, somebody that works for the National Institute of Health, please, straighttalk.cc. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Get on the website. Tell me when we think the BRCA mutation was introduced into the genome. No, I'm not a medical doctor. No, I'm not a molecular biologist. I'm a holistic practitioner, and I have an insight, and I'm asking people, someone, to tell me when the BRCA mutation was introduced into the genome. Can we track it the last 1,000 years? The last 500 years, can we track it all the way back to when Angelina Jolie's lineage was eating farm-fresh food, unadulterated, clean air, clean water, no chemicals, serene lifestyle, close to God and nature. Can we track that gene back then? And you want to know something? I'm open either way. But not just that gene, all these genes, because all these genes are going to be studied now. All these genes that produce all these diseases will be studied. You will be genetically tested. You will be genetically scrutinized. We need to know it. Insurance companies need to know it. I don't want to hire you for the job. You may be dead in 2 years. You may get low back pain. What about the gene for low back pain and you want to work as a physical laborer? You want to work construction. You want to drive a truck. You've got a scholarship to college. You're a professional athlete and you've got the gene for low back pain. Your cartilage is going to disintegrate. By the time you're 29, based on the genetic testing, we can give you a 95% probability that you're going to be half crippled by the time you're 30 with arthritis. And we'll accelerate that number if we give you this sports contract. The implications here are profound. And you want to know something? Maybe we should know. Again, I wish my mother had been counseled. My mother wasn't going to do anything. My mother clenched. My mother wasn't happy. My mother was frustrated. My mother tore, like many mothers, when they birthed. My mother was exhausted. She lived in New York. New York was filthy. She ate processed food and junk. You know what? I wish she had been told she had a high probability for this, if she in fact did. So we got to get real here. There's two sides to this argument. But we should at least be exposed to the second side. And that is my point. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc. Call the office, 949-873-2127. 949-873-2127. I have a school. I'm running three classes simultaneously. These classes are where you can come to get educated about topics that influence you. And you should. Because your education is your protection, and there's so much chronic illness out there. How can you really hedge the bet unless you're educated? It's inexpensive to come. It's a lot of fun. I haven't missed once yet with my classes. We're running these classes, both classes, one class over a year and a half, the second class just about a year, and the third class, we're just starting off with a bang. 949-873-2127, or just get to the website, straighttalk.cc, and give me a comment or two. Want to hear from you, good things, bad things. You're out there in the public, you're going to get both. So what? So what? This is about debate. This is about commentary. This is about objectivity. This is about forget where you're making your money, forget where you're lining your pockets, and simply get to the truth of the matter. And the truth is, both sides will have valid points. The premise here with this show, with all 105 shows, has been both sides, allopathy and holistic medicine, have valid points. Can we get over the hump and begin to integrate intelligently? It will do both sides much good. Both sides much good. Without which, both sides will continue drinking their own homemade version of their own Kool-Aid. And that's the problem. Both sides are slanting the picture. It's called ego. We don't need it. Not when people's lives are at stake. Let me ask you this. If you are interested in breast cancer, go get genetically tested. Find out if you have the BRCA mutation. And applaud science. Applaud science for knowing that. And there may be other deleterious mutations that we identify. But demand epigenetic considerations. Demand to know if the epigenetic considerations are environmental. And if your doctor can't give you commentary, the man in white that stands high above in the great edifice we call the hospital, with all the multi-million dollar equipment, stands way above you and shouts down, "Epigenetics, you don't even know what that means." You tell them you heard the show. You tell them that you read this article in Discover Magazine. You tell them that you understand what a histone is. You tell them you understand what a secondary determinant means, that some epigenetic factors are just as genetic, in a sense, as the primary deleterious gene. But you tell them that what they're telling you can be augmented sometimes, dramatically, as in the case of the Agouti mouse. If you don't have a medical doctor that wants to listen to that, get rid of your medical doctor. And if you find one that does listen, if you can persuade one to have an open mind, tell him he's a better representative of true science. Don't let him hide behind his white coat. Praise him where he should be praised and chastise him where he should be chastised. Clear the playing field so that you feel more comfortable in your articulation. If we go that way down the future, we're going to create better medical doctors and better holistic practitioners, and we're going to have a healthy America, a healthier America amidst, I think, our obviously dwindling ecosystem. On the subject of breast cancer, if you're concerned, I did a show on breast cancer. I can't remember the number, but the title makes it obvious. Look it up. Listen to that show. Please listen to that show. One central point of consideration was thermal imaging versus and in conjunction with the mammogram. Why is this so complicated? It's not. There is no cancer. There is no oncologist. There is no medical doctor. There is nobody in oncology, in breast oncology, that will argue that when a tumor is in its tiniest state, it is an area of higher metabolic activity. Before it's even a threat, it is a clear area of higher metabolic activity. It'll come up as a red spot on the thermogram. Find a medical doctor. Find a female medical doctor with breasts of her own. One that has some virtue in her face. One that you can talk to. One that just doesn't chastise and condescend. That's what they teach them in medical school now, to talk nicer, because the public clamors for somebody to speak to in a white coat. Find one, do that for yourself, that does thermal imaging. And when a part of your breast, which is recorded each year or so on the thermogram, starts to become a little red, mammogram it. Watch it. Look for the cancer markers. Do the blood tests. See if you've got the deleterious gene. Check it out. Be on it. Be vigilant. Don't panic. Don't have anxiety. Be vigilant. In any given day, anything can happen. Are we supposed to live not remembering that? The word is vigilant. keep an eye out and do something about it. Be proactive. That's how you calm yourself down. Be proactive. Do it with a thermogram. And when it gets a little red, meaning there's inflammation, do what you have to do to get rid of the inflammation. Doctor, what can I do to get rid of the inflammation? I'm sorry, Mrs. Smith, there isn't anything. That doctor needs to be replaced because that doctor is not reading his own medicine. Inflammation in a tissue can represent hundreds of things. You have to contrast it. You have to reference a little bit of inflammation in the breast to your health profile. If you want a checklist, you don't have to just use my checklist, but I do have 104 shows focusing on important topics, asking you to do things that often don't include supplements, that are just about olive oil and garlic, that are just about getting a good night's sleep, that are just about fixing your bite, opening a meridian. Create your own health profile and then take that little red spot on a thermogram to your health profile and look at that checklist and check off the places you think you need to work. Maybe you don't know what bile is. Maybe you have no concept of a gallbladder flush. Maybe you've done them and you've never seen bile. Maybe you don't know what autonomic balance means. Why the gallbladder? Why does the bile need to flow when you get that little red spot on the thermogram? Why, if you have an issue with breast cancer? Because if that gallbladder isn't patent, if you can't move bile, you cannot suck poison out of the fatty receptacles in the breast. As you enhance biliary flow, you accelerate the rate at which you drain poison out of fat. We know that's true. There's great speculative science, if not hard science. And if you can't find that in the medical registry, the relationship between getting the bile to flow and greater health, I dare you to do a little experiment. I dare you to take that little red spot on your thermogram and spend the next year doing gallbladder flushes. Do them correctly. Learn how to do them. Coffee enemas and gallbladder flushes. Get that breast massaged. Open up that thoracic area in yoga. Stretch the area underneath those armpits. Put the healing clays up into the armpit and on the breast so it can drain. So it can drain into the bile ducts, which are now flowing. And then stretch that area out until it gets warm with blood and lymph and drains and nerve flow. So that you stretch so deeply into that armpit, into that breast, that it changes your posture, that your shoulders just fall back naturally, that you look like you're blossoming again through the upper thoracic area, front and back. So the hump between your shoulder blades starts straightening out. And then go do that thermogram again. Go look for that inflammatory site again. And I'll give you, just on the basis of one variable, biliary patency, a massive shift in the inflammatory process in your breast. If that doesn't catch you, and you're getting up every single morning tired because you just organize your life so that you can't get an extra hour or two of sleep, for the next 6 months, subject that little red spot on the thermogram or that little spot on the mammogram that they're not going to cut out because they don't really think you should. That strict medical counsel exonerates you from surgery or any type of other excision. And just subject that red spot, medically supervised, to an extra 2 hours of sleep every night so that you start waking up perky in the morning and bouncy. Just do that. Have the metal taken out of your teeth. Have the decay taken out. Have the rotted teeth underneath the crowns that you haven't looked underneath for 15 or 20 years fixed. Start exercising again. Do you get the point? Sure you do. If you're concerned about your breast, there are dozens of things that you can do. How about where you put that cell phone? Oddly enough, right on that breast, in the breast pocket. Or maybe you always listen in your left ear with the cell phone 2-3-4 hours a day. And sure enough, it's the left breast. It's got that red spot on the thermal image. And we could go on and on and on. And if we did, what we'd find is, specific to your profile, your concern, your anxiety, rather than thinking that you have to basically bend to a destiny of a deleterious mutation, bend to a destiny of a genetic slant, would be all these things that may well, if science would just take the time to find out, may well be part of what we call the epigenetic environmental factors. That's common sense. So we're back to common sense. Once again, this is common sense. This is the Common Sense Show. But you see, common sense seems to get really wet. It gets weak. It falls apart. It turns to melted ice cream. When we say, under the power of the study, the peer-reviewed journal, put together by a team of passionate scientists with no biasness, no slant, pure objective science, funded by who? Who is this science funded by? Is it funded by people that have solutions that make them billions of dollars? Well, that's the study you're listening to. Maybe that's the advice that Angelina Jolie took. We don't know. I only know one thing. If you study the last 100 years of science, we've made some huge mistakes. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. Get to the website. Listen to this show again. Learn what the histone is. Learn what methylation means. Learn what acetylation means. Look at the double helical structure of DNA. Don't feel stupid about it. Don't think you have to be a molecular biologist or a geneticist. Or don't think your marginal understanding, despite the fact that perhaps you've been infinitely more successful in your own life and business than your medical doctor, don't think that your less than sophisticated understanding means you can't have an intelligent position. Please understand my passion here. My passion is to tell you that much of what we call science relies on scientific instinct. And scientific instinct is what, in the common jargon of the time, we call common sense. Your intuitive sense. It makes sense. And it doesn't make sense if we're evolving towards a culture that's going to give you a checklist of genetic tests to tell you whether you should start thinking about excising different organs because you've got a slant towards a particular illness or disease. And of course, that's not what we're talking about, Dr. Medici. I think you're really jumping the gun here. It couldn't be possible that over 20 years, with all the money that the Angelina effect is going to grant from the National Institute of Health, it couldn't be that in the next 20 years you're going to be profiled genetically. Couldn't possibly be that, could it? No. I'm just jumping the gun. I'm a quacky holistic practitioner, and I've got a penchant for confusion. What does your common sense tell you? What does your common sense tell you about the fact that 300 years ago we weren't getting these diseases? Tells me that something's changed in the environment, because that's what's changed. Love hasn't changed. People haven't changed. Our basic physical structure hasn't changed. Nothing's really changed except the ecosystem. The number of chemicals we have dumped into the air, into the water, the rivers, the oceans, the number of preservatives, so on and so forth, has increased exponentially. We were comparing the world 500 years ago, 300 years ago, 200 years ago, to the world today. What would we say? People's faces look different, trees look different, the sky looks different. No, we'd say there's a presence. That presence is called pollution, chemicals. That's a change in the environment. Now use your common sense. If we hadn't had these diseases 300 years ago, and we've got them everywhere today, if we went from maybe, what, 1 out of 20, 1 out of 30, to 1 out of 3, in 150 years, and the change we can see demonstrably, grossly, visibly, is a change in the ecosystem, how could we not admit that the epigene may well be heavily slanted in terms of the environment. That's what you have to think about. The common sense behind that statement. The next time the men in white tell you that epigenetic environmental choices, options to change these horrid mutations that we have in a sophisticated sense isolated are invulnerable. You really got to think about that. I have nothing left to say. I think we've done a wonderful job today. Let's commemorate a shift in American social, medical, political history. I kid you not. Watch what happens over the next 20 years as it relates to this topic. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. I'll see you next week. Call the office if you need any kind of help. 949-873-2127. Good day.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.